for I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation, to everyone that believeth, to the Jew first, and also to the Greek. Shalom, and welcome to the Everlasting Nation Broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions in Hickson, Tennessee. Now here's your host, IBJM Ministries Director, John Lawrence.
The country of Russia is a very significant Jewish mission field. I'm John Lawrence, your host, and welcome to our program today. In spite of a vast wave of immigration to Israel over the past 15 or 20 years, Russia still has an extensive Jewish population of nearly 500,000 Jewish people. There are now 1 million or more Russian-speaking Jews who have emigrated to Israel. Most of the Jewish people in Russia now are concentrated in two major cities, Moscow, where there are about 200,000 Jewish people, and then St. Petersburg, where there are about 100,000 Jewish people, and then the rest are scattered in smaller populations in other cities in that country. Jews were severely persecuted and often exiled, of course, under the czars, and they were usually not permitted to live in the major cities of Russia. Forced conversions of Jews to the Russian Orthodox Church were also very common. With the communist revolution that occurred back in 1917, the severe repression took other forms. For instance, the practice of Judaism was strongly discouraged by the communist government. Zionism was entirely outlawed, and it was forbidden to study Hebrew in any form or fashion. During World War II, restrictions were relaxed, and Jewish people played an important role to the Soviet war effort. But many, unfortunately, were also exterminated in the Nazi-occupied parts of the country. The oppression of Jews again became official policy in Russia after the war. Since the fall of communism, the Jews have officially experienced more freedom to pursue their culture and their religion. However, with the rise of many sort of hyper-nationalistic groups, anti-Semitism has also been on the rise, and violence in Russia against Jewish people is not at all uncommon. Russian-speaking Jews have played an outstanding role in the Haskalah, that is, the Zionist movement, and in the development of Jewish socialism. Reform Judaism has been on the rise in Russia during the last decade or two. Four Jewish universities have been established just since the Soviet Empire disintegrated back in 1990. There is an urgent need, of course, for missionaries to go to these two principal Jewish population centers in Russia. Moscow and St. Petersburg need someone who would preach the gospel in these Jewish communities. But there are also major enclaves of the Russian Jewish people in Israel, and as we mentioned, here in the United States and also over in Western Europe. So there are opportunities there. We have a couple, the CLAPS, going to reach the Russian Jews in New York City, for example. Russia has been less open as a mission field in recent years, and renewed attempts have also been made now to limit religious expression, and particularly the ministry of foreign missionaries. So it's not an easy place to work. And now, how long will the doors remain open to us? Well, we don't know. There is no quick or easy answer to that question, but we should strike while the iron is hot. We need people who would be willing to go and willing to work diligently to reach these Russian Jews before this God-given window of opportunity closes tightly shut again. Perhaps the Lord is speaking to your heart about Jewish missions in Russia. It is a great challenge. Is the Lord perhaps calling you to be the one who might go to this country? He will go before you, and he will prepare the way. He will open a door that no man can shut. Now let's listen to our friend, Jewish believer, Brother Mark Ashman, as he brings our Bible message today.
Thank you for tuning into our radio broadcast. For the next several programs, we will look at the deathbed blessings that Jacob bestowed upon his sons, as recorded in the 49th chapter of Genesis. Jacob spent his early life as a plain man dwelling in tents, an expression recorded in Genesis chapter 25. The Hebrew adjective tam, translated as plain, had nothing to do with appearance, but rather character. The use of tam in Jacob's description implied a contrast between the lifestyle of Jacob, which was comparatively upright, and the lifestyle of his twin brother Esau, which was rather ungodly and profane. The word tam appeared to denote integrity. When used in Psalm 37, it denoted the, quote, perfect, unquote, man. An examination of Jacob's life might indeed raise some questions about his personal integrity. Jacob cheated Esau out of the birthright which rightfully belonged to his older brother. Jacob tricked his father Isaac into giving him the parental benediction. After Jacob married Laban's two daughters, he hated Leah, the firstborn, but loved Rachel. Jacob secretly ran away from his father-in-law, Laban, without informing him in advance about his departure. Jacob's behavior during the earlier portion of his life suggested that he'd possessed a number of serious character flaws. The 32nd chapter of Genesis, though, described an event in which God transformed Jacob's life. Jacob and his entourage were traveling back to Canaan, intending to meet with Jacob's brother Esau. He became frightened when he learned that his brother Esau approached him, accompanied by an armed escort. Jacob sent his family and his possessions ahead of him, while he remained alone at Peniel. There, in the words of Hosea chapter 12, quote, he had power over the angel and prevailed. He wept and made supplication unto him, unquote. On that occasion, recorded in Genesis chapter 32, God said unto Jacob, quote, thy name shall be called no more Jacob, but Israel, unquote. The change in names had significance. Whereas the name Jacob meant supplanter, the name Israel denoted Prince of God, or someone who had confronted God. After his encounter at Peniel, Jacob went through a number of trials. Contrary to his expectations, Esau did not seek either Jacob's wealth or his life. Jacob had family problems as well. A Hivite prince by the name of Shechem raped and kidnapped Jacob's daughter Dinah. Jacob's sons, Simeon and Levi, reacted first by persuading the Hivites to become circumcised, and then slaughtering them afterward. Perhaps the greatest grief that Jacob experienced related to his favorite son, Joseph. The narrative found in Genesis chapter 37 described what happened. When Jacob sent Joseph out to find his older brothers, the latter seized him and stripped him of his coat of many colors. They then threw him into a pit and ultimately sold him as a slave to a caravan of Midianites. Jacob's sons, Joseph's brothers, then took Joseph's coat, put the blood of a goat upon it, and returned to Jacob. They showed him the coat and said, quote, this have we found, know not whether it be thy sons or no, unquote. Upon seeing the bloody coat, Jacob tore his clothing, donned sackcloth, and mourned for Joseph. Moreover, he refused to allow his own family to comfort him. The 42nd through the 44th chapter of Genesis contained the sequel to this story. A prevailing famine compelled Jacob to send his sons into Egypt to purchase grain. During their first visit, they came before Joseph, who, unbeknownst to them, held a high position in the Egyptian government. Joseph gave them grain, returned their money unto him, but held Simeon in Egypt as a prisoner. Joseph also requested the brothers to bring Benjamin, their younger brother, when they came back to him for grain. In the course of time, Jacob again told his sons to acquire food for them in Egypt. He initially refused to send Benjamin with them, saying, quote, me have ye bereaved of my children. Joseph is not, and Simeon is not, and ye will take Benjamin away. All these things are against me, unquote. Judah offered to forfeit his own life if Benjamin did not return safely. After that offer, Jacob acquiesced and allowed Benjamin to journey to Egypt with his brothers. Once again, Jacob's sons met with Joseph, who received them courteously. Joseph invited them to even dine with him, contrary to Egyptian custom. Before Joseph sent his brothers away, he arranged to conceal a cup among Benjamin's possessions. He then apprehended the sons of Jacob and found the missing vessel. Joseph declared, quote, "The man in whose hand the cup is found, he shall be my servant," unquote. Joseph then offered to allow the other brothers to return to Canaan, free and with grain, but without Benjamin. At that juncture, Judah interceded. Judah said, quote, "It shall come to pass, when he seeth that the lad is not with us, that he will die. And thy servant shall bring down the gray hairs of thy servant, our father, with sorrow to the grave," unquote. Judah even offered to become a slave himself in Benjamin's place. At that time, Joseph finally revealed his true identity to his brothers. He sent them all back to Canaan with wagon loads of goods, inviting them all to return and settle in Egypt. In response to that offer, Jacob and his family moved to Egypt. For the next 17 years, the group lived honorably and comfortably in Goshen. According to Genesis chapter 48, Joseph visited Jacob after he heard that his father had taken sick. Joseph brought his two sons, Manasseh, who was the eldest, and Ephraim, the younger. Jacob, in effect, adopted both young men into his own family, saying, quote, "And now thy two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, which were born unto thee in the land of Egypt before I came unto thee in Egypt, are mine. As Reuben and Simeon, they shall be mine," unquote. The author of Hebrews wrote, quote, "By faith, Jacob, when he was a-dying, blessed both the sons of Joseph and worshipped, leaning upon the top of his staff," unquote. Some Bible students have questioned whether Jacob actually committed idolatry on that occasion. Did Jacob actually worship a rod or use it as an aid to worship? Note that ever since the patriarch's encounter with the angel in Genesis 32, Jacob, quote, "halted upon his thigh," unquote, requiring him to use a walking stick to support his weight when he ambled about. Thus, in Genesis 48, Jacob might have leaned on his staff as a means of supporting his weight when he sat up in bed to bless Joseph's sons. When Jacob blessed Manasseh and Ephraim, he knowingly placed his right hand on the head of Ephraim, the younger, and his left hand on the hand of Manasseh, the older. At first, Joseph thought his father had confused the two youths for one another. Joseph tried to correct him, to which Jacob replied, quote, "I know it, my son, I know it. He also shall become a people, and he also shall be great. But truly his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his seed shall become a multitude of nations," unquote. The reason Jacob gave to Joseph for his behavior will explain his actions in connection with the deathbed announcements that Jacob made to his sons. Jacob did not love Ephraim more than Manasseh, nor did he hate Manasseh. Yet Jacob declared that the descendants of Ephraim would constitute a greater nation than the progeny of Manasseh. In other words, Jacob was prophesying, not expressing his preference for one lad over the other. In similar fashion, Jacob's statements in Genesis 49 did not reflect the degree of love he felt for his various children. He might have had serious reservations about his son Judah, for instance. Judah had married a Canaanite woman. He had had sexual intercourse with another Canaanite woman, his own daughter-in-law, no less. Judah might have also offended Jacob by taking a Canaanite woman to wife. Nonetheless, those circumstances did not prevent Jacob from bestowing his blessing upon Judah and Judah's descendants. Jacob, before he died, assembled his sons in order that he, quote, "may tell you that which shall befall you in the last days," unquote. Over the next few sessions, we will look at the nature of Jacob's statements. We invite you to return for future Bible studies about Jacob's deathbed blessings.
You've been listening to the Everlasting Nation broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions. For more information, you can write us at P.O. Box 1386, Hickson, Tennessee 37343, or call us at 423-876-8150. Or you may also go online at ibjm.org. Until next time, may God bless and shalom.